It's the Wired.co.uk podcast, episode 100 for Friday, the 9th of November, 2012. Ahoy, ahoy, Nate Langston here, and I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk, of course, and joining me is Olivia underscore Solon.
Yeah.
Now, it is 100 episodes and 2 years since we first recorded the Wired.co.uk podcast, and we have got a smashing show for everyone here tonight. I think there's no denying that. Firstly, we are recording this episode in front of a jam-packed live audience. They are packed like jam. Make yourselves heard. And secondly, we are recording this episode live at the fantastic Holborn Whippet in central London, which is actually only the second time that we've done a live version of our show, isn't it, Liv?
It is.
Yeah, I think it's right. And it's also the first time that we've had to sort out our own venue. So actually very grateful to the guys here. Neil has been a particular star. Thank you very much, Holborn Whippet. But tonight we're recording live, but unlike the show we did from Wired 2012, this will resemble something a little bit more like our regular weekly podcast in terms of news, information overload, entertainment, I think.
And no late supermodels.
No late supermodels. But we've got a few surprises because this is, of course, a celebration. One part of this celebration, of course, is the fact that the audience here is drinking a beer that we have brewed ourselves. It's called the Squigs Boson.
It's a powerful beer.
Can anyone tell what we did there?
I have no idea.
It's a very secret drink. We couldn't think of a better way to celebrate our 100th episode, our second year podcasting for Wired.co.uk by brewing our own beer. So we have worked with the London Meantime Brewery to brew the beer that we're drinking this evening that we have called the Squigs Boson. So thank you ever so much, because we've been enjoying it.
We have.
I think it's fair to say. And we've got a few surprises in store tonight as we work the way through the show. Listeners at home are going to have the chance to win a wireless home audio system from Sonos. That's quite nice. But also, and this will come as a surprise to everyone here, but somebody in the audience right now will also get the chance to win Sonos audio system. Those oohs are well placed. We also have a very special guest coming up to join us later that honestly I could not be more excited to have here with us. Having pretty much spent the last 20 years of my life watching him on the TV in one of, I think, Liv, one of Britain's best sci-fi comedies.
I think I have to agree right
now. In history. But anyway, as always, we're going to start with the week in Wired News. And the first thing we're going to talk about tonight is the fact that Microsoft has filed for what can only be described as a living room snooping patent. Liv,
yes.
Calm my fears.
Yes, well, Microsoft's filed for a Kinect-based system, filed an application for a patent for a Kinect-based system that could be used to kind of snoop on your living room a little bit. The idea is that it could allow content creators to count how many people in any one living room are watching any piece of content. So instead of charging for a pay-per-view model, they could charge for a pay-per-user view model. So at the moment, there's no way of telling whether there's one person watching that movie on Netflix or whatever other, you know, content streamer there is, or 20 people. And so this technology would use Kinect sensors to scan the number of people in the room and then charge based on the number of people that are in that room. So the more people, the higher the charge. So I wanted to get a very quick kind of sense from the audience, like how they feel about that sort of idea. So how do we feel about Microsoft counting you when you're in your living room at home?
Theoretically.
Boo. Yeah.
That's bad, in my experience.
It's not good. I mean, I guess it's an elaborate way to check whether pubs are using kind of home subscription services for something like Sky, when actually they should be having a commercial, like, business contract. But still, it's a bit dodgy. Like, the only way I can see that it actually would work would be for the sample that Barb uses. Now, Barb is the metric for TV audience figures. And at the moment, there's about 5,000 people in the UK who are used as the sample size to measure the TV audiences. So when people say there's 8.5 million people watching The X Factor, it's actually an extrapolation from that 5,000 people sample. So I can see why it could be useful in that one instance where there, you know, these people who've already agreed to sign up to be part of this sample might have an additional sensor.
Can I throw a spanner in the works?
You can.
Why is me paying for my content not enough?
Well, quite. I mean, do we not think, like, no one's checking up on you when you buy your DVD or your CD?
No one I know about.
How many, you know, you're playing your CD at a party. OMG, there's 100 people listening to it. We need to charge more.
Why are we not charging for the podcast? There's like a million people in this room.
Yeah, everyone, cough up. £5 a pop and Swiggs boson. I mean, what more could you want? But anyway, I mean, obviously this is only at the patent filing stage, so we can't, you know, we can't judge too quickly, but I think the general consensus is it's a scary Big Brother-esque move.
I think...
Don't want to put words into people's mouths.
I know for a fact that there are people from Microsoft who listen to this podcast, so I think we can poll the entire audience here. Well, I mean, we already have. But, you know, we don't like this. Let's not do this. It sucks. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about something that Ian wrote about, who is, if I am planning correctly, is working his way around. Yes,
hello.
He is. Hello, Ian.
Can you hear me?
Welcome to the podcast. Of course we can hear you.
Oh, great.
You know, we're professionals. Now, you wrote something this week that caused a bit of a stir.
Yes.
Got picked up a lot of places.
Yes.
Did a lot of traffic. Thanks very much.
It's all right.
It's good of you.
Yeah.
About the Russian underground economy... democratizing cybercrime.
Yes, cybercrime for everyone.
Yeah.
It's,
What's going on?
Well, I was speaking to a company called Trend Micro. They're a security company for computers who have been looking at the underground cybercrime market in Russia. This is forums and chat rooms, places in the deep web where people are exchanging things like Trojans and other kind of tools for getting people's data. And there's a lot of it out there, and it's surprisingly cheap, actually terrifyingly cheap. I spoke to Rick Ferguson, who's the Director of Security Research and Communications there, and he said that this is like an established market where every niche is catered for, and he means like every niche. I could kind of read off a lot of examples from that.
We could, but I mean, this is coming from Russia, right?
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a hotspot for cybercrime.
Yes.
It's hot.
One of.
One hotspot.
Yeah, along with places like China and Brazil. He called Brazil the spiritual home of banking malware, so don't open any like Brazilian emails, apparently.
Yeah, so we're talking about Russia, but this is just because the report was looking at Russia, as opposed to Russia being the only place where cybercrime has been democratized.
Yeah, but it is very bad there.
It is.
There are lots of different tools. Like there's this program called Zeus, which is apparently creates Trojan botnets that kind of steal people's data. This has been around since like 2006, but now the source code is out in the open, and it's kind of like in this open source criminal project where people are taking this Trojan's code and creating botnets for each other.
Well, we can actually look at a list of some things that you can buy. I mean, you can buy a DDoS attack for between $30 and $70 for a day of you know, distributed denial of service, taking down a website for like what, 30 quid a day?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it can be as cheap as $2 for an hour, I think, to hire a botnet and just take down someone. Say someone's annoyed you.
Why are we not doing this to take down our competitors?
It's Ian. Immoral.
You know about this.
I'm
shocked.
You didn't
say anything.
I'm shocked.
Okay, but you can get SMS spam for between $3 and $150 per 100 and 100,000 messages sent.
Yep.
So we could be telling a lot more people about what we're doing right now.
Yep. Yeah. If you you particularly want to get into their Facebook account, it's about $130 to get into their Facebook account or Twitter as well. There's other stuff. There's like if you want a scan of a passport, a legitimate passport, $5. Not that's pretty good value. It's better than the passport office here, isn't it? So
How can I become a Nigerian millionaire? How can I become a Nigerian millionaire?
Well, I'd say, you know, spend $150 to send 100,000 messages to
people.
Okay, so I mean, this is crazy, right?
It is. It's a really kind of puts into perspective just how widespread this is. But I mean, there are steps you can take to counter it, obviously.
Yeah.
One thing he did make quite clear was that Android is quite a problem at the moment. So mobile is this big growth area for malware because people have all their information on their phones, but it's not very well protected. So,
how many people in this room use Android? Meager show of hands.
About a third.
You people are all at risk.
As long as you stick to official channels, you'll be okay.
But you could. One of the most interesting things that came out of this report is that ransomware is particularly popular now, which is where someone can take over Liv's computer, yours, Liv, which
Liv's
is right here. I can
Not
see
my
it.
Computer.
I could take over this computer and I could charge you for getting access back.
Yeah, to make sure that you don't send out my naked photos.
Yes.
Sorry.
I would pay at least £5 to prevent those from going out.
Yeah.
And that's why people do pay that.
Yeah.
They do pay that. And they will give you your computer back, but don't do that. It's a stupid idea.
Yeah. And people do pay this, right?
Oh, they do. And they will give you access to your computer back. Has anyone here had the ransomware one where, like, you're on a computer and a webcam comes up and shows you and says that, you know, they're going to contact the police if you don't give them money.
What are you doing online?
You speak from a man of experience.
I didn't have this. I didn't have this, but I've seen it in action. And they say, give us $20, we'll give you a computer back.
Do they automatically superimpose your head onto, like, a naked lady? And they're like, we could show this to anyone if you're not careful.
That's just your imagination.
Okay, sorry.
If you pay the fine, they'll give you a computer back. But, you know, you have no idea if they're still on there in some form. They probably are. I mean, you've basically given yourself away as an easy mark. Someone is going to give money for very little incentive. So don't do that.
Very well. Well, I think you've scared us all.
Yes.
It's a good job we have beer. It's a good job that I'm on a Mac and don't use Android. We're going to move on to a topic that involves a certain chap called William Shatner, who has released something over the last week or so.
He's probably released several things, but this is one of the things he's released.
He has released an app that lets you create chateauetry. David, while I fumble for my iPad mini, which I've neglected to bring onto the podcast arena here, why don't you explain to all these people here and the people at home what the hell chateauetry is?
I will. Yes, there is now an app for chat. oh, come on. I spent all day working on that alone. Yes, as Nate has just told us, William Shatner, the wonderful man who has recorded 3 studio albums. He's recorded a wake-up call for the crew of the Space Shuttle Discovery when that was still running. He's also sold a kidney stone for charity. The man has now finally listened to all of his fans and released his own app, the app called Chateauetry. So basically what this app does... Oh, am I still here?
It's okay.
What the app does is Mr. Shatner, the 81-year-old man, he has recorded a whole list of evocative poetry words. So anything that you might want to record, you know, in terms of like your standard poetry.
But
I'm looking at some here, and we've got words like cruel. And illusion.
My favourites were phantom, suave, and cowardly. He's got a great voice
what
to get around those
with
words.
Cowardly.
I don't know exactly. That's the challenge that you've got to find out. And so essentially, thanks. Essentially, what William Shatner has done, he has recorded every single word on this app 3 times to allow you to have different emphasis of the different words. So there are nearly unending possibilities of the various different forms of poetry you can write. And what you can do, you can just drag each individual word onto your screen, create tense pauses, and write any kind of verse that you would normally like to write. I had a go.
Yes, you did, and I've got it on my iPad here.
Yeah.
And so it's one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Oh. That's
honestly,
not what you were saying earlier, Nate.
Before I was a journalist, I worked in a school. a school full of young children. And they made better stuff. I'm sorry, mate.
Thanks, Nate.
I'm really sorry. It is cruel, isn't it? Who wants to have a listen to what...
This is my attempt at chateauetry. This is the Shat Slam.
Journeying bird has little belief. Cruel fears and fires are fog to her. An illusion of dreaming is all she finds.
Oh,
wow.
You
That's
missed the cushion.
Powerful
Thanks.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Coming to a YouTube site near you.
Thank you, William Shatner. Thank you very much for that magical moment.
Yeah, so the app costs $1.99. There is a pass-to-play function, so you and your friends can sit there creating poems for each other, passing it around, spreading the joy of chateauetry. And I thoroughly recommend it. It's a really good way to spend an evening.
I have to retract my previous criticism, because listening to that through a very large PA system with a room full of happy people, it changes the dynamic to when I'm furiously planning a show and trying to listen, is this good enough to put on the show?
Excellent. I think it's a thing of beauty.
It penetrated my soul.
Did it?
I'm and glad. Other parts of me.
David.
Yes, this is a William Shatner. He said that it's not the... There are quite a few words on there, but you can run out of potential after a little while. So he's wise to that. He's going to be releasing different word packs. So he's going to do a Star Trek word pack. Who wouldn't want to create, like, logs? You know, you create your own...
We should do a wide The Cutting UK blog.
Yeah.
I think we should.
And he's also going to have guest authors. So Chateau Etrie, you've heard it here first. Expect it to be a growing form of poetry. And yeah, I'm going to try and set up a Shat Slam somewhere here in London. So listen out for that.
Fantastic. I think it's absolutely amazing. And I mean, really, this is kind of reminds me when Brian Blessed did a voice pack for the TomTom navigation system.
It's exactly that kind of thing.
Who doesn't want to hear a guy go, turn left, turn left? It's... Anyway, thank you very much, David. It's been wonderful. That may have come as a bit of a surprise to anyone who hasn't actually used the Brian Blessed TomTom app, but he does yell at you for turning left. Let's talk about a man called Kim, shall we, Liat?
Yes, why not?
A man called Kim.com who has said that suing the US will fund, quote, free broadband for all Kiwis.
Yes, the US.
What a nice man.
And Hollywood. He's planning on suing them for the pleasure of free broadband for all New Zealanders. So, yeah, big character. Kim.com doesn't really do things by halves. He's his latest bold claim is that he will be suing the US and Hollywood for the unlawful taking down of Mega Upload. And he will also fund this project with the profits from Mega, his new file sharing site.
Now, he wants to put an undersea cable to yes. connect the US to New Zealand.
Exactly, yeah. He wants to pick up where
it's quite
a
an
company
audacious
called...
claim, let's be honest.
It's pretty
here,
audacious,
like...
but they were planning on doing it anyway. In all fairness to .com, a company called Pacific Fiber was planning on installing 13,000 kilometers of undersea fiber cables for just this reason, but they could, well, where they failed, he is planning on succeeding in raising the cash. So it takes about 400,000 New Zealand dollars, and he's promising free broadband for all New Zealand citizens.
Nice.
Businesses and governments have to pay. Well, actually, they will have to pay a nominal fee, probably, the citizens, because he's going to give it free to the ISPs, and they'll be charging for things like routers. But he reckons it will be about a fifth of the price and four times faster than current broadband. So,
there's been another bit of news with the whole Mega thing, because, I mean, he is in some legal hot water.
Let's
put it that way.
There's a few flaws with his plan here, let's say. A few major flaws.
Now, he's decided as well that he wants to launch a new version of his infamous file sharing website. Oh, sorry, file hosting website.
Yes. Yes.
Called
hosting.
Mega, ME.GA.
Yes.
And he's got into trouble, sort of, because the country that runs the .GA domain has said, yeah, you know what? Not that keen on that.
Yeah, Gabon doesn't really want to be
not that
dragged
great.
Into this.
Not that good.
He thinks this is all part of a conspiracy still against him, because actually... Universal Media, who he thinks has a vendetta against him, actually has a link to the telecommunications company that supports the TLD
in Gabon.
It's all part of the conspiracy against .com. He is just a lone wolf, and everyone is non-believers. But I think generally New Zealanders have been quite pleased that the conversation has started again. They want free broadband. I think everyone's been quite in support of his plan. I think the Americans perhaps. Not so much. They're currently
like
trying
him.
To extradite him, and he wants
he's
to...
He's a big target.
I just love Kim.com. I don't know what it is about him. I think it might have something to do with that photo where he's surrounded fully by foam and his face is just appearing in like a foam party.
Ladies
but there
all
is something
him.
Magical and wonderful about Kim.com. He's like a unicorn. You know, illegal activity or no illegal activity, he is mesmerizing. How does everyone in the audience feel about him? Am I just super biased? Let's get a sense. Yeah. Okay, yes, I am. It looks like I'm the
burst
only person
my bubble
who's
is all the images of him with all his hot models and hot cars. He's like a husband and father of five children.
Yeah.
Honestly,
Liv, I think that's the first time anyone has compared Kim.com to a unicorn.
Yeah, well...
I think you're in danger of being obsessed with unicorns.
I
think we're well beyond that.
Yeah. Well, okay. we'll be keeping our eye on this, of course, as the news progresses. It's a mega story. Oh. Wow, not even a boo. That was really, really bad for me. And we are going to move on to our next section. And we have a guest. We have a guest this evening who, as I said in the intro, I could not be more excited to have on the show. It is, of course, some of you will know him as Crichton, but he is, of course, Robert Llewellyn. Round of applause, I think, please. Thank you so much for coming down. Now, I know you're missing Skyfall to come and do this.
I know. I actually managed... Oh, I saw it this afternoon. I managed to fit it in.
Okay.
So I'm Skyfalled up.
Because yeah. I know when you emailed, you said, well, I was going to see Skyfall, but I suppose I could do your podcast as well. I was sort of preparing to have to summarize it in five words.
You know. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Yeah.
It would be something like that, basically. Yeah. So, but we're not here to talk about the cinema stuff. I first want to start talking about Red Dwarf. Mm-hmm. Now, Red Dwarf 10, which I think is actually on as we're recording isn't it?
It starts in 15 minutes. Yeah.
In 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are. Yeah. So, you know, it's not live, just so you know. But to be honest, I mean, when we sort of watched the first episode that came out a few weeks ago, it really felt like a return to what Red Dwarf was sort of in the 90s. You know, sort of Series 3, Series 4, Series 5, you know, gag after gag, chatty vending machines, and just you guys stuck in a spaceship. I mean... What is the atmosphere like, or what was the atmosphere like on set? Like, did it feel like it did in the 90s?
Yeah, I mean, it was uncanny that we're now all sort of men in our late middle age. We've all got kids. We've all changed quite a bit since I mean, I've been doing it for 24 years, which is slightly alarming. And it was like we'd had a week off. It really didn't feel like... It was 14 years since we last recorded a show in front of an audience.
Wow.
And so there was a 14-year gap. It was a bit of a challenge the first night. There was some nervousness. Chris Barry has a particular sort of hand-wringing habit that he does before, and I noticed he was doing it big time just before we went on. And I was, I don't know how else to describe it, but shitting myself, even though I was, I'm technically a mechanoid. There was a little bit of human activity going on. I was very nervous, yeah.
Yeah. And how was it? I mean, it's not the first series that you worked with a digital channel, because, of course, you did the previous series on Dave. But, I mean, how does that differ from working with something like the BBC, which, to be fair, has significantly more restrictions, I would imagine, than Dave? I mean, how do they differ?
I mean, to be honest, from our experience, it wasn't that different, because the original series of Red Dwarf was always an independent production. So we always made it either in BBC Manchester or in Shepperton Studios, which is where we did this one. So we were kind of distanced from the BBC by a sort of degree of that. And occasionally BBC executives would come down to watch us doing a camera rehearsal, and they were always appalled because we were just so sloppy and unprofessional if there's no audience there. When the audience was in, we did the job properly. So they were slightly baffled by us, I think. And I think the old school BBC hierarchy, which is universally white, male, Oxbridge, there was no one in Red Dwarf at all with that background, not on screen or behind the screen. So none of the writers, none of the producers, nobody was. So we were the exact antithesis of Blackadder. And I'm a massive Blackadder fan. I'm not denigrating it, but Blackadder is almost uniquely Oxbridge and white and male. And so it was always an uncomfortable fit within the BBC. So that's gone. Dave have been incredibly supportive of it. We work on a very small budget, so that's slightly different. So everything is done like really as tightly as we can, including our fee, which is considerably reduced to how it was. But that said, we had immense support from them. They were always there. Every night there was a recording. All the executives from UK TV came down. The audiences were fantastic. So, you know, at the end of the day, it was an amazingly positive experience.
Brilliant. And I want to talk a little bit about American sitcoms. The US has a tendency to want to sort of take British comedies particularly and then reformat them for sort of 24 episode multi-year seasons and things like that. And in fact, you played Crichton, as I'm sure you're very aware, in a pilot episode of Red Dwarf that was, shall we say, quite different to the UK version back in the day. I mean, is this something that you've ever wanted to maybe re-explore now the show's back on the air?
I mean, I don't think we'd ever do it. I don't think any of us who were involved in that. So that was the two writers, Rob Grant and Doug Naylor, and myself were involved in that thing. I think we all, I personally was very relieved when it didn't happen. I didn't want to live in Los Angeles and I didn't want to particularly do it, but it was an extraordinary experience to do. I mean, up to and including the fact that when I walked into the set of the sleeping quarters of Red Dwarf, which was identical to the British set, I ducked my head as I walked through the doorway because on the British set it was so low I had to do that. And in the American set it was about 8 feet above my head because everything was that much bigger. So that was a kind of symbolic part of the experience. So it was an amazing experience to be an actor in Hollywood, be paid a silly amount of money to do a pilot with really good actors. A lot of the actors who were in the Red Dwarf pilot have gone on to do to be incredibly successful. So they were very good cast, but it was just such a bizarre hybrid of the original show in England. And it was a great relief to get back to doing proper Red Dwarf.
Yeah. I heard talk that there was some discussion of trying to do an American version of Father Ted at some point, about a bunch of Irish guys on an island in Ireland.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how that would translate, but I mean...
No. I mean, a lot of people have tried it. I mean, if you think The Office was a great success, the American Office, but they completely restructured it and they didn't try and do the same thing. And I mean, I think that worked extremely well. So it's not a guarantee it's going to be a disaster, but there's certainly plenty of disasters.
So let's move to the web. You've been a big supporter of web-based video shows. I know that you're... show Carpool eventually moved to TV, and you've been producing Fully Charged now for a couple of years, I think.
Yes,
I believe.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, do you think that this is the future of broadcasting? Let's just throw a massive question.
I think it's a future of broadcasting. I mean, there was certainly a time when I first started doing it, when I first started to realise that you could do it. You know, that for instance, someone like me could record a series, edit it myself, upload it myself. Make every single mistake that you could possibly do, but you know the fact that it was conceivably possible. I was really sort of evangelical about it, and then I kind of realised that it wasn't going to replace television, but it was going to be an alternative way of doing it. I mean, it certainly worked in terms of the number of people who've watched it. I mean, it's been extraordinary. So that side of it is very exciting, and the fact that an individual can do it. Now, okay, I had some advantages: one, being older, having contacts in the industry, so I could get kind of technical support. On all aspects of it, and also having the contacts, particularly with Carpool, so that I could basically ring up my old mates and say, can I give you a lift? You know, but I also got lots of people I'd never met before. I mean, a lot of the people on Carpool I'd never met before they got in the car. I mean, ever.
We were chatting actually just before the show. I mean, I looked at a page that listed all the guests you've had on Carpool before now. I mean, it's a really amazing list of names.
It was extraordinary. Yeah.
Incredible.
And the amount of people, the amount of people who said no, they wouldn't do it, is literally two or three. There's two or three
who
people
were they?
I approached. I don't think I want to name them, but I'm there's one or two people. Who's David Mitchell marrying soon?
Victoria
Corrin just said no. That's not the sort of thing I do. I'd met her once. She was obviously nice. Then I emailed her, and she just said no. So she said no. Well, it's fair enough. I don't hold it against her.
And I would be very happy to do it.
Yeah,
very happy indeed. Let's talk a bit about Fully Charged, because this focuses on electric vehicles, which I know you're a bit of a fan of, I think. But I've seen some electric vehicles going up and down the streets in Mayfair, and they always seem to look a little bit sad. You know, kind of like getting a lion to run by feeding it yogurt or something.
Yes.
What do car manufacturers need to do to tempt more people into getting into electric cars?
I think if I knew, I'd be a multimillionaire running a huge automotive company. I mean, I think making them... I think it's so much down to the experience of driving them. So I have one at home. Everyone that comes to my house has a go in it. Mm-hmm. From the most disinterested woman who drives her kids to school in a massive 3-ton SUV and then goes to buy a litre of milk and it costs her £8. As soon as she gets in the car, she goes, I want this one. Every man that's been in it, who's got I live in an area where there's some people who do have expensive cars, they just love it straight away. And one of my neighbours, who is an actual hedge fund manager, had one drive in the Nissan Leaf, the car I drive, and he bought one the next day. I mean, I was really pissed off. For him, it was like buying a sandwich. You know, it's like, oh yeah, okay, oh I like that. I'll have one of those. Yeah, the tuna. You know, it was like that was how much choice. And I'd fretted and worried and saved up and been anxious about it for years. And he just went boom. So, the experience of driving them is very different, I think, to the the perceived experience that's often fed to us, particularly by certain areas of the media that are extraordinarily hostile, and it doesn't quite make sense. It's a car.
Yeah, it's not us. We're
I know. Oh, you're very, very, very good about it, and Wired have been very supportive. But, I mean, certainly things like the Gee Whiz really didn't help. I've often wondered whether the Gee Whiz was secretly funded by Exxon. Yeah. You know, because it was a brilliant advert of how... And I've driven a Gee Whiz on a car park in Shoreditch over the smallest bit of rock that a toddler wouldn't trip over, and the poor thing couldn't get over it. But I mean, you know, if you then go to the other extreme, Carl, I think we may mention later on in the show, the Tesla Model S is an extraordinary car, and everyone who's driven that, from the most sort of bitterly pro-petrol, anti-electric car petrol head in America, the journalists have gone, this is the good one. You know, yeah. I mean, it is the most extraordinary vehicle.
Very expensive, isn't it?
It is expensive. Because you can only compare it to other expensive cars. So it's about the same or cheaper than an equivalent BMW or Mercedes. So it is very expensive for normal people, but for people who buy those sort of cars, it's cheap.
I see. So, I mean, what about like things like hydrogen fuel cell? I mean, I actually don't have a license, so I'm sort of way out of my depth here. but I was driven in a hydrogen fuel cell car, actually, by somebody who's in the audience. There he is. A Wired veteran, Chris Finnemore, in fact. Right. Now, we went to Berlin and drove around I think it was a Honda.
Honda Clarity.
That's the one.
Brilliant
and,
car.
You know, I mean, it's speaking from a complete point of ignorance in terms of what cars are like to drive, like, it did feel like quite a nice
car
be in.
Yeah. So, I hope that I will live long enough to see the general adoption of hydrogen fuel cell cars, because it's very true. The only thing that comes out the back is some water, not very much. They're a brilliant piece of technology. The Honda Clarity costs over $2.5 million when you're talking about expensive cars. Ooh. You can't buy one. They'll only lease them to you. The fuel cell alone is about $500,000 just for the tiny little fuel cell between the two seats. So at the moment, when you talk about expensive, that they're unbelievably expensive. To make a lightweight, small fuel cell that generates enough power to run a motor, the Honda Clarity also has a massive lithium-ion battery pack under the passenger seats, which isn't advertised very much because it can't produce enough electricity on its own. And also, I think the really important question we have to ask as consumers is, where does the hydrogen come from? And why are big oil companies so keen on us to adopt hydrogen as a fuel? Because where it comes from now, 99% of hydrogen that's used now is from natural gas. It's steamed out of natural gas as part of the oil refining process. So it is a fossil. They are fossil fuel cars. Now, you can make hydrogen by splitting it from water, but it's about a 4-to-1 loss. I'll try to do it as quickly as you can. So you put 4 times more electricity in than you get hydrogen out. So until those problems are solved, and how you store hydrogen, and how you transport it, and how you, you know, all those things, I think it's longer term. So I'm hoping that in 20, 30, 40 years' time, there'll be hydrogen cars. I'm slightly cynical about it because I'm so old that I can remember in 1972, during the oil crisis, seeing a man on the telly from Rover going, in the future, the quote was, in 15 years, we'll all be driving hydrogen cars. That was 1972. Well, I can't do maths now. When's 15 years after that?
It was more than that.
Yeah.
It was a while, I don't know. 40 years, actually.
And it's a constant refrain, particularly from the oil industry. Oh, hydrogen's the future, hydrogen's the future. Top Gear, sponsored by Shell, always, always pushing hydrogen, hydrogen, hydrogen. The batteries we use all the time. All these laptops, all our phones have batteries. That technology has jumped by enormous leaps and bounds. And the breakthroughs in battery technology now are staggering. And the efficiency of generator to battery to wheel is phenomenal.
Actually, in the pilot episode of Fully Charged, you were comparing how mobile phones in like the 80s were like, you'll get a few minutes of talk time.
That's all you get.
And now you get, you know, I mean, if you have one of the classic Nokias, that thing will stay alive for about 9 years.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, if you don't use it, it will be going when the Earth isn't. And, you know, there's a lot there. But this actually brings me on to the last question about the car side of things, which is that we have a number of electric charging points around London. We have a couple near the Wired office, actually. But thinking about this projection of 20 years, I mean, is the government doing enough to promote this, given the nature of, you know, oil and things that we have right now? I mean, is enough being doing to move people to these sorts of vehicles?
I mean, I think the changes are happening now, and they're not happening in places where we walk around and see them. So, for instance, there are now about 20 motorway service stations with fast chargers in. So it's completely different technology. It's not a little blue post with a little blue light around it, because that's 13 amps. That's what you boil a kettle with. If you plug an electric car into that, you get about 10 miles range for every hour it's plugged in. It's very slow. When you plug it into a fast charge, you get about 60 miles range in 30 minutes. So it's very fast, much higher voltage, much higher amperage. So, and I use those all the time. So I stop at motorway services, plug in that thing for about 10 minutes, and that gives me enough range to do the next leg of the journey. So it's a completely different take. There will be 130 of those installed this year. They're installing them very fast now. And that absolutely changes the picture, because then it suddenly means you could drive to Scotland in an electric car. I think the very important thing is just one very simple fact, that because it's another aspect of it that's not often known. I've driven 22,000 miles in a Nissan Leaf, and it's cost me less than £300.
Wow.
Now, just to put that in perspective, the cheapest petrol car that you could get, a tiny little Econobox, three-cylinder, super-efficient petrol car, would cost you about £1,500 to do the same, and a Range Rover would cost you £11,900 to drive the same distance. So that's partly because electricity is cheaper, it's partly because it's a much more efficient way of using the energy. And that's what I'm interested in, is on a kind of global scale, we would require less energy to use electric cars than we do using petrol cars.
That's a huge number. I mean, think about the amount of times I could hack into Liv's computer.
Yeah.
You know.
I was going to say that you probably spent more on the sandwiches that you ate while you waited for your car to charge
much
than
more.
You did on the
electricity.
Well, I mean,
at the moment, the charging is actually free when you go to those. There's no road tax, no congestion charge. And actually, the cost of charging outside the home at the moment is free. So, I mean, that will change.
You definitely do.
There's no question that will change. But the problem that the governments have, they can't tax electricity. I mean, I've talked to ministers. They can't tax. They don't know how to tax it. Because also, I make quite a lot of the electricity that I use in my car. I make it from solar panels. So they don't know how to tax it. They will tax electric cars. There's no question. They have to.
Yeah.
But it does change the whole economy of the automotive industry.
Well, some fascinating numbers, I have to say. I didn't know how cheap it was to run a Leaf. But just before we finish up here, I have one last non-car-related question. It's not to do with cars. And it's based on something that a very famous talking toaster once asked a very famous computer. Now, bear with me here. Given that God is infinite, that the universe is also infinite, have you enjoyed being on the Wired Cut UK podcast?
I certainly have, sir.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Robert Llewellyn, everybody.
The video version of this podcast is brought to you by Fixation Video. Fixation Video is an online video production company founded by tech journalists that understands editorial content. Videos produced by Fixation Video can be online in minutes rather than hours and have been viewed by millions of people worldwide. Covering events, product launches and announcements anywhere in the world, video can be streamed live or edited on site, so it's online in minutes.
Now, we normally wrap up our news in the first half of the show, but, you know, we're doing this one live, and we have a very fantastic guest. So we're going to do a little bit more news and hope that you're okay to stick around and talk about this.
Good.
And
fine.
Don't forget, you can win some stuff in a bit. So,
yes.
You know, one of the things I wanted to talk about is that the Netherlands, specifically the highways in the Netherlands, will glow in the dark from mid-2013. This is a story that we had on the website earlier this week. And this sort of smart road design features this weird glow-in-the-dark tarmac and these illuminated weather indicators that can actually respond to weather conditions. So, for example, if you imagine driving down a road that is, let's say, very cold, this paint that they can install and paint onto this road will start to glow with the shape of, say, a snowflake, to warn drivers that, hey, it's cold, there's ice on the ground, and you can literally see it in front of us. I mean, this is pretty amazing, right, Liv?
It opinions. Seems like one of those, like, no-brainers, though, doesn't it? You kind of, like, it's one of those ideas that you think, why the hell haven't we had this already?
Yeah.
But I love it. I want more glowing roads. I want more symbols. I want animal symbols. I want human symbols. But yeah, we'll start with snowflakes. I'll take snowflakes.
We'll have to start with snowflakes. It's not just a concept, though. I mean, this has actually been put together by a company called Studio. And I can never pronounce some of these names, but
Rosegarda.
Thank you, Liv. It's those people.
Very good.
And an infrastructure management company who I think I'm pronouncing correctly is called Hymans.
Yeah,
and it is.
We actually asked quite a few people on Twitter about this. Nate, first of all, suggested they were Norwegian, but actually we very quickly deduced that they were Dutch. So
yes.
Thanks to all those people who suggested the Dutch pronunciation of Heimans.
That's the one. And they together have won an award by the Dutch Design Award for Best Future Concept. And they've developed, actually, not just a concept, but a working prototype of this sort of powder that will glow in the dark, that they can turn into paint. And the best thing about this whole thing is that it will take in the sort of the sunlight in the day and use that for about 10 hours of illuminating time in the night.
Ah, that's good. I like that.
Why don't we have this?
Yeah, I want it.
Yeah. I want it as well.
Well, they're going to install a few hundred meters of this paint in the summer of next year. And I think we should really get... I mean, you know some guys in the car industry, Rob. I mean,
yeah.
We've got it.
We've got to
get this stuff here.
I'm getting my electric car over to Holland and I should be looking at the pretty patterns on the roads.
Okay, I think that's a word to the government. We've got to do this. Now, Liv, let's talk about UFOs. I've heard the humanoid UFOs have returned to India.
Yeah, sort of. Like, normally when we hear about people who say they've seen UFOs, we think, like, crazy. We think, like, middle America. However, there have been more than 100 reports of UFO sightings in India. And the sightings haven't come from the usual kind of, well, crazy, should we say. There have been more than 100 sightings, starting with the Indo-Tibetan Border Police, who flagged this mysterious yellow spheres that have been flying between the border of China, Chinese territory and India. And so, first of all, it was these border police. And they saw these spheres floating in the sky. They'd rise up over the Chinese border and then float for a number of different hours. Then, after the police spotted them, they sent out the army, who came over to check them out. And they also had a few issues with identifying what these objects were. So they then sent out the Defence Research Development Organisation to investigate. And they still couldn't really explain what these objects were. They actually installed some kind of radar tools and some spectrum analysis tools, and none of these objects were detected with these tools. So far, it's all been a little bit mysterious.
Didn't they send a drone, actually?
Yeah,
after
that, they sent a military drone to check it out, and they found that they couldn't. They kind of chased it so far, and then they kind of lost vision of this object. So and then they even sent astronomers. So they sent astronomers, and they worked out that it wasn't a celestial object, but they still didn't know what it was. So we're left with this extraordinary situation where the head of the security. Of the security team senior army officials in India have said something is clearly wrong if our combined scientific resources can't explain this phenomena. But it remains unexplained.
It's
That's
a mystery
the
still.
It is a mystery. There was one person who postulated that it might be a Chinese lantern, but you'd like to think that Chinese lanterns might have been picked up on one of the various instruments and or by one of the various experts that they picked. But what
Robert,
do you think?
I was going to say, as a man of the stars, sometime in life, I mean, what do you make of UFOs?
Well, I mean, if in the universe that Red Dwarf inhabits, there are no aliens. A lot of people think there are genetically engineered life forms, which are things that have grown out of human research. So I would say it's the Chinese have a technology that is far advanced of our own.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying. That's kind of the implications are that China is developing some kind of technology that isn't detectable by radar that they're testing at this border between India and China. However, you know, it's taken many, many men of wisdom to not be able to detect these. So it's kind of extraordinary, but interesting.
Quick show of hands. How many people in the audience think that UFOs have passed over our country?
No, but what? I mean, you're talking about aliens or unidentified flying objects.
Seven or eight. Highly nervous arms erect
today.
But
hang on, Nate. The unidentified flying objects are just things that they can't explain. It doesn't mean we don't have to talk about alien life forms.
I want them to be aliens.
I was going to say, I'm talking about aliens.
Yeah,
how many people think aliens apply to
London? The Indian authorities have all said that they're not extraterrestrial things. They're fully easily explainable by terrestrial terms. It's just what they are is what they need to decide.
Do you know what I think is extraterrestrial? Tesla Motors. Which is the topic of our last news story for this evening, which has claimed in its quarterly earnings report that it has reached, quote, a fundamental turning point in its business, and it could see the company manufacturing somewhere in the region of 20,000 vehicles a year, which I believe is quite a lot more than they're producing right now. You are, I think, Robert, something of an expert on
this.
Well,
not an expert, but I've knocked around. I have seen the Tesla Model S. I mean, it is the car they're making now.
Now, I think they're selling or producing somewhere in the region of 350 cars in total, at least in their last quarter.
Yeah.
And they're jumping up now to 20,000 a year. Yeah. I mean, from your knowledge, I mean, do you think this is something realistically they can actually do? Are we in a position where we can?
I think they could do it because they took over a massive automotive plant in the United States that was originally built by Tesla. So they're not making them in a couple of old sheds in Silicon Valley anymore, which is where they started. So it is a very, very large manufacturing plant they have at their disposal. They have quite a lot of US government money, which caused a lot of trouble during the last election because it was money that Obama was throwing away at green liberals, you know, and all that nonsense. But they have an enormous amount of orders on their sales books. A lot of people want to buy the car. Now a lot of people have seen it. It's been on the roads in California. He's also installing quite extraordinary recharging system for the car. So you can do really long journeys that. That car, the top of the range car, has a range of 300 miles, which for an electric car is now, you know, sets the pace really.
So it's quite positive for Tesla then.
Yeah, I think it's. I really hope it works for him because Elon Musk, the guy that runs the company, is an extraordinary human being. And I mean, yeah. A lot of people say that Iron Man is based on him because he's such a charismatic guy. You know, he did the SpaceX stuff. He's really kind of very, very driven. And his arguments,
literally,
when you hear his arguments about why we need to get off oil, they go beyond the sort of petty politics of, you know, or even international global politics. It goes, as the human race, we need to move to a place where we don't burn stuff to do things. Mm. And I mean, I think that's it should be an aim for the human race. Let's move to a world where we don't burn one thing to make another. You know, and it is, those things are becoming technologically possible.
I saw a guy the other day going up Piccadilly in an Illuminous jacket on a Segway. Now, I think he's probably heard similar advice, but acted on it in slightly the wrong way.
I find Segways hard to love. I have fallen off one. Because you're not meant to be able to fall off. I could fall off.
You fall off.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to wrap up our news for the time being. But we're going to move into something that's a bit of a game. It's going to involve the guys to my left. That's you lot. Getting a little bit involved, possibly. We're going to play something that we called Wired Tired, which Liv and I did not conjure in the office in the last 2 days, did we, Liv? No, we didn't. And what we're going to do is we want to run through a small list of topics, and we want to find out whether you think, collectively, they are wired, that's great, or whether they are tired.
That's bad.
That sucks. And the first thing that I want us to talk about is something that, since we have quite a lot of number of journalists in the audience here as well, is Windows 8. Now, as a show of hands, how many people think Windows 8 is wired?
Show of hands doesn't work very well on the podcast. Should we have a show of voices?
All right, fine. A show of voices for Windows 8.
Wired.
Yeah.
Wow, my goodness. And how many people think Windows 8 sucks? It's tired. You people are boring. Let's go to that gentleman over there with the glasses. Yes. Why is Windows 8 wired, precisely? They're doing what, sorry?
They're finally moving things on. They replaced the start menu, which is really boring, with this, you know, all these crazy tiles, and you can get word search games and apps and that kind of thing. Everyone in the office thought it was crap for the first 2 days. until... After 2 days, it was a bit like Stockholm Syndrome. They actually started to love it. And I installed it on my PC at home, and my girlfriend absolutely adored it, and she downloaded every single word search app she could find and tried to beat a dog for D from Oregon at word search and all this shit. And actually, it's a lot more interesting than Windows 7, which basically was just XP with bells on.
Okay, well, that's a definitive and very long answer. Thank you very much indeed from a man who writes about computers for a living. Thank you. I want to ask, I mean, it's been in the news a lot recently, President Obama. We had quite a geeky campaign in the US. Obama wired?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to bother asking for a tired. Let's move on to something else. Let's ask about Zynga. They've also been in the news quite a lot recently. Who thinks... Oh,
there's a lot of boos.
You, sir. You have booed at Zynga. It's tired. What's wrong with Zynga?
What's right with Zynga or Farmville? Or I don't know, maybe that's not a good thing to say.
It's
that would be my counterpoint.
Okay. I'd actually have it. What's good about Zynga? Good point.
I don't know.
Now, Liv, something that's close to your aortic pump, I know, is pink as a heart. It's a heart. is pink gadgets. I know you love your pink gadgets.
They're actually very far away from my aortic pump. I don't think that pink gadgets... well, pink gadgets, specifically when they're marketed to women, I'm not a big fan of. And I hope that there are some people in this audience who agree with me. I know it's fairly sausage heavy in the audience, but I think even with sausage, you can appreciate that it's patronizing to suggest that pink products are marketed to women and every other product is marketed to males.
Does anyone in here have a pink gadget in their pocket right now?
No, but that's...
really sorry.
I've got a pink USB fob and it's my favourite one and it's pink. Yeah, I just realised, yeah. I didn't choose it. It's
I
just
can't believe
arrived.
You just asked about pink gadgets in people's pockets.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I like my faux pas.
I'd love a pink phone, you see. I'd like pink stuff. Pink laptop would be great.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the colour inherently. It's just when you're
told... No, it shouldn't be girl. No, absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's a pathetic marketing ploy.
It is.
You know, what are we making? What will girls buy? Pink. You know, yeah. I mean, what can you call someone who thought that? A pillock. There's nothing else.
I think that is a very definitive tired for pink cars. Sorry, I'm looking too... we don't like them either. I'm looking slightly ahead of my thing, Mark, for electric cars. We've just talked about this right now. How many people here think electric cars are wired?
Yeah!
Ooh.
And how many people think they're the scum of the earth? One person over there whose microphone probably can't get that far.
It's Jeremy Clarkson in drag. It's not that. That was mean. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
To the lady at the back. What's... Go on.
I arrived in a Porsche 911 Carrera S. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
She's driven a Porsche 911.
That's a nice car, Nate.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a nice car.
Okay.
If you, like that sort of car.
Yeah.
Everyone else is going to buy one, so that's fine. You can have your Porsche. Let's talk. Let's see what else we got on this list here. What about X Factor for Tech? I've heard that's about to happen.
Well, actually, as a TV show.
Yeah, so apparently Simon Cowell and Will.i.am have teamed up to create a kind of forum to find the next entrepreneur, tech entrepreneur.
Right.
So they're saying that, you know, tech entrepreneurs are the new rock stars.
I mean, that should be good. It's just that when I hear the two words Simon and Cowell in the same sentence, certain parts of my body just want to evacuate and I can't help it.
Does anyone here think that X Factor for Tech is a good idea?
I think it might be a good idea.
I think it's a good idea.
All right, Liv does.
I don't know if it'll be executed well, but I like the principle.
Yeah, I mean, I like the principle.
I like the principle of celebrating talent rather than, like, karaoke skills.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, absolutely. I'm with you. I 100%.
But whether Simon Cowell's the best person to do that or not remains to be seen.
I think I should be on it. Thank you.
Let's move on.
Disembodied man. Well, disembodied boys. Thought the rest of you is probably still there. Let's pick three more. What about Scott Forstall leaving Apple next year?
Meh.
Yeah? What about him not... Well, anyone who thinks that...
Anyone has a strong opinion either way. I don't.
No? All right, fine. Let's do another one. Beards. Why is Beards on here?
Because...
Beards,
yes.
Wired or tired?
Beards are out.
Oh, beards.
Yeah, beards.
That's my age. I couldn't hear it. I didn't know what
you were
saying.
You've got a beard.
Yes, I've got a beard, yeah.
Are you pro beards or you just...
I'm just lazy. Can't be asked to shave.
All right.
It happened to grow on your face.
Very last one, which I can now legitimately ask you. Skyfall.
Oh, yeah.
Wired or tired?
Getting a lot of love for Skyfall. What is your opinion? Yeah. You can have the last word on this section, Robert, because you saw it today.
I saw it just before I came here. I'd say, I guess it would, I wouldn't call it tired. I'd say it was wired. It was interesting. There's a couple of technical things in it that annoyed me, but that just was the sort of inner nerd leaking out while I was watching it. But no, I mean, it's very good. I think it's very good. So wired.
Yeah. Wired. Okay, that's brilliant. That's gonna close our round of Wired Tired. Thank you, audience, for your participation. Now, we're getting very close to the end of the show, I'm afraid, but we do have a couple of things I want to go through, and one of them is going to win someone in this very room and somebody at home It's going to win them a Sonos Christmas bundle.
Now, what is a Sonos Christmas bundle?
We've been very
excited.
So we have got, I've got to remember this actually, we have got a Sonos Play 3, we've got a Sonos Bridge, and we've got... Oh, and we've got
6 months subscription to Napster.
We've got 6 months subscription to Napster. Okay, so we've got two of these sets to give away. And Liv, yes. I'm going to let you lead this quiz.
Can I just quickly say, why don't you add that into the prize?
Oh, hello.
Just so it's the only way I can plug it. That's my new book. And that can be a part of the prize as well. You can
Excellent.
Give that to whoever wins that.
Okay, so what...
Let's plug this. What is this?
Can you just tell us in one sentence what the book's about?
It's a utopian vision of the future. It's a utopian vision of the world in 200 years. Very high tech, but lovely.
Hello. So there we go. You can have that in addition to...
Okay. News from Gardena available now.
Would you sign it for whoever wins
it? I will sign it for whoever wins.
Okay. So you're going to get a signed copy of Robert's new book, as well as a whole load of Sonos kit. Liv, okay. Let's take this away.
Yes, so the competition is very simple. I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and there is one of two answers. The first option, you're going to have to put your left hand up, and the second option, you're going to have to put your right hand up. If you get it wrong, you're out, and you do not go forward to the next round.
And you need to look at the person to your east and to your west.
And judge them if they are lying when they move on to the next level.
If they are cheating, they are cheating you.
Okay.
They're not your friends.
So, the first question is, the Latin term Ursus Arctos, does it mean brown bear, that's your left paw, or does it mean polar bear, that's your right paw? So put up your left paw for brown bear, right paw for polar bear.
This is awkward looking at it like stage left, actually.
Okay. So everyone who put up their right paw, everyone who thought it was polar bear, you're wrong. So... You're out immediately. So can you kind of move to the side so we can see who's left? So who said brown bear? Who have we got left? Okay, still quite a few.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Excellent. Second question. According to Google Trends, in 2012, who has been searched for the most? Boo the dog or Maru the cat? Left hand for Boo the dog, right hand for Maru the cat. Put them up.
Ooh.
Okay. So whoever put their right hand for Marry the Cat, you're wrong. It is Boo.
One, two, three,
How
four.
How many people are left?
Five, six.
Okay, we'll have one more question, then we'll go into the tiebreaker, which is very exciting.
We've got eight questions. We really overestimated
yes.
the...
What is the collective name for a group of sea cucumbers? Is it a pickle or a salad? If you think it's a pickle, it's your left hand. If you think it's a salad, it's your right hand. It's a pickle, so left-handers, we've got three. I think it's time for our tiebreaker question.
Okay.
Right. Okay, we have one more question. This is the only question that hasn't got two options. It's a person who's closest to the right number.
By a means of how many? Because this is.
It doesn't matter. The closest.
Okay.
We've got. What is the total number of pages in all 12 issues of Wired magazine from 2012? To the nearest number. So you've got three people left, and we want to hear what answers you have. So, who are the people who left? We've got one person here. Have we got the microphone? What's your number?
I say... Wait, what's the question again?
What is the total number of pages in all 12 issues of Wired magazine from 2012?
All 12 issues?
Yes.
From 2012?
Yes. January to December, all the issues of Wired.
1,000.
How many?
1,800.
Okay.
I would say 1,000.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
After you, I said.
What was your name? Harriet.
Harriet.
That was Harriet.
So Harriet's saying 1,800. She changed
7,
it.
7,000.
So Harriet.
7,000 from.
Harriet said 1,000.
7,000.
Hang on.
Yeah, 7,000. Richard.
So Richard's gone for 7,000.
So Harriet said 1,800, Richard said 7,000. Have we got one more person?
Yeah, 1,799. Yeah!
1,799.
Well, I know exactly who's won.
We've got some competitive guesswork going on here. It's getting ugly.
So, Harriet, you have won all the kits. It's actually, the number we were looking for was 1,860. So, very close, very close. Congratulations to Harriet.
Congrats. And for everybody who is listening at home...
You've lost control of the audience.
We gave away free stuff.
Okay, we gave away free stuff.
For everybody who is listening at home, you can also win the identical set of Sonos gear. If you go to wired.co.uk/podcast100, you will be in with a chance of winning the same kit. Just before we finish up, we want to thank everybody for being here. And one of the things that we've done over the last 2 years of podcast is build up quite a nice audience of listeners. And I just wanted to mention just two or three people who have written in with some incredibly nice words who wanted to say something. The first is from a guy called Richard Gunther, who says, greetings to Nate and company. I just wanted to congratulate you on your 100th episode milestone. Nate, you and your colleagues have created a... I need to return my little text here. You have created an interesting, entertaining, and educational show that I love listening to every week. The show has evolved so nicely. It's so professionally produced. It's almost hard to believe that your studio is actually a supply closet.
Or a pub.
Congrats and great show. I think that is rather nice, I have to say. Why don't you take the next one, Liv?
The next one is from Paul Mellish, who is a great guy. He's the one you actually spotted once in Victoria Station.
Well, he spotted me and scared me.
Okay, so he's a bit creepy, baby. No, but Paul said, sorry that I couldn't make it tonight. Thank you for recording one of the most interesting podcasts out there, delivered every week in a perfect package. Whether it's unicorns or nanotech armor, I look forward to listening every week and love discovering what you've been up to. When I recently bumped into Nate by scaring him at Victoria Station, I asked where he was off to. He coolly replied, I'm just off to Brian May and Sir Patrick Moore's house, I presume.
They don't live together. Brian was visiting
about
Patrick.
About the new book that they have written. Having just spent a great day at London Zoo for my daughter's birthday, I thought, bugger, I can't top that. So Nate, Liv, Katie, Liat, Ian and David, I wish you every continued success and triumph for the future. Always wired, often tired, but not yet expired. Paul Mellish. Yeah. Hey.
That is the nicest email I've ever received.
Yeah, that is delightful.
But the very last thing I wanted to show is that longtime listeners of the Wired Cut UK podcast will, of course, know that Duncan Gear used to host the show with us and left to go and study environmental science. He's doing a master's in Sweden, actually. Me and Liv to go and do this. And he has actually sent in a video message, which... I'm going to try and play off my iPad and let you hear because, he did a very nice thing. So hang on, let's see if this works.
Hello guys, I hope you're all doing wonderfully. I thought I'd send you in a quick message from Sweden to congratulate you on your 100th show. It's an enormous achievement what you've created and I'm so happy to have been part of a little bit of it. I've been enjoying myself in Sweden. It is cold and wet, but I'm having a really, really good time. I've grown a beard, as you can see, to sort of cope with the weather. And I'm also doing a show on Gothenburg Student Radio, K103, if you want to hear a little bit more of my voice there. But I'll let you guys get on with the show. Again, huge congratulations on your 100th episode. And make sure you eat a little bit of pod cake for me. Bye-bye.
Duncan Gear, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no pod cake. There's just pod beer.
If anyone needs to hire an environmental scientist, I recommend Michael Fish. No, of course, it's great. Anyway, all that leaves me to say is firstly to thank everybody so much for coming out tonight. It's probably one of the most exciting things I've ever had to arrange to celebrate 100 episodes of this podcast, which we literally did
start... only thing you've had to arrange to celebrate 100 episodes of this podcast.
Have minions. It's been fantastic. I want to thank as well the Hoban Whippet and Neil and his team here for hosting us this evening. It's been absolutely fantastic. Let's hear it for those guys.
Thank you, Hoban Whippet.
And second, thank you, of course, to the Meantime Brewery, London's Meantime Brewery, for letting us brew our own beer, the Swigs Boson, which we've massively enjoyed. It's lubricated the old grey matter, both hemispheres. And sorry, that's a bit random, wasn't it? So thank you to Meantime Brewery. And of course, the entire event tonight actually has been filmed for us by a very good friend of mine and who runs a company called Fixation Video, who I have to say, thank you so very much for filming our episode.
Yeah.
Let's give it up for these guys as well.
Yes.
Thank you to Robert Llewellyn for coming in and joining our show, making it special. We will see you again in 1 week's time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.